The Mask and the Masked. I'm sorry, but I disagree. There is no necessity for mystery beyond entertainment. There is no reality to fantasy. It's purely a vehicle used by weak individuals to escape from the pressures of the world. Granted, we all use it on occasion, but no clear-minded person would ever give it credit by suggesting that it had any power. Next, you'll be telling me that fairies, ghosts, and sightings of UFOs should be taken seriously. But why stop there? Let's suggest that I can change the way I think and the way I behave by using magical flim-flam techniques outlined by Eliphas Levi, Freemasons, and other mountebanks. Unless I fall prey to insanity, I'm not going to be meeting denizens of the astral plane or aliens from other worlds. I am what I think, this is what I am. The world is what I touch, see, taste, and smell, nothing more. In that case, let me present you with a token of your achievement. With that, before I had time to object, he confidently gripped my left arm with his left hand, and with his right, he deftly twisted a red and black beaded bracelet around my wrist. He leaned back, admiring his work, like an artist reviewing a newly finished canvas. Then, quite suddenly, with the focused gaze of a predator stare, his eyes locked with mine, I felt as if I was in the fatal, comatose state of a victim. I do not recall what broke this spell. Maybe it was a sound from outside in the street, or maybe it was just the fact that once he had proved his dominance over me, there was no need to pursue it. Relieved, I took the time to fiddle with the beads. While turning them around my wrist, my only thought was that I'd take them off once I was away from this individual. "Thank you, you're very kind. We will see," he replied. We sat in silence. I contemplated the fact that I felt horribly intimidated in the presence of this strong-willed individual. Taking me by surprise, he inquired, "Perhaps you would allow me the opportunity to demonstrate your point on the power of fantasy." He did not wait for my response, but abruptly stood up and walked towards a heavy wooden door on the far side of the room. He slowly turned toward me and said, "Well, are you ready?" I shrugged and commenced to follow him. My ascent was obviously a mere formality. After pressing down on the brass handle, he pushed open the door and led me into a large room that was dimly illuminated by numerous candles that appeared to be arranged in geometric patterns. Burning tapers revealed depictions of archaic mythological scenes on the shadowed walls. The flickering light, captured in the heavy, swirling incense smoke, danced to suddenly audible droning music. While activating these illustrations into animated holographic images, the impression created by the light and smoke was so strong that it seemed as if the figures were actually stepping out from the very walls that held their images. As if that was not enough, even my host began to take on the elastic qualities of the illustration's animation. His face and torso seemed to bend and meld with the rhythm of the ambient atmosphere. He moved like a snake shedding its skin. I felt that at any moment, he would mutate into some member of the reptile or insect kingdom. To distract myself from these growing disturbing impressions, I tried to discern where the music was coming from. But this offered little relief, as it was like an atmosphere. Without center or direction, the very air itself permeated the entire space like a living entity. Further attempting to draw myself into rationality, I directed my attention to the floor. Taking up the whole center area of the room was a large yellow circle. Drawn upon this were crudely drawn lavender symbols, which could have been letters of an archaic language, or equally, the random daubings of a disturbed mind. At the far end of the room, also painted on the floor, was a triangle. Its single point away from me, colored black. It had white letters on it that were similar characters to those painted on the circle. The striking thing about the triangle was that above it rose a 6-foot-tall tripod with its three legs perched on the pointed corners of the triangle. "Please sit in the center of the triangle under the tripod," he directed, while pointing towards it. I thought about asking some questions that might work towards alleviating my fears. However, thinking this, my hallucinations subsided as quickly as they had arrived. I took a deep breath, walked over to the triangle, and squeezed myself between the legs of the tripod, all of the while coughing from the intensity of the incense. I don't know how long I sat there in the triangle, but it seemed only a few minutes. I was therefore very surprised when he opened the door through which we had entered and asked me to follow him. Although I sensed having been in the room for only a few minutes with nothing visibly happening, I had the eerie sensation that something had occurred of which I was not fully cognizant. The bracelet had been getting heavier and more burdensome ever since the stranger first put it on my wrist. So much so that I had to take it off today. The weight came not so much from its physical presence around my wrist as from the effect it was having upon my life and the direction my life has been going ever since putting it on. In the ensuing period since having it wound around my wrist, I've been confronted by one crisis after another. I realized that I had unconsciously allowed this stranger to impress his will and his assumptions on my being without my permission. This act had the effect of cracking open my universe and populating it with legions of alien intelligence. I realized that my statement to this stranger had been the words of a fool. Like the fool in the tarot, I fell into the abyss and entered the real world, the world beyond the limits of my senses. Therefore, this morning, after having a terrible night of anxiety, I ate my pride and took the bracelet off. I could feel an immediate relief of tension. The gesture made me admit to myself that my brash statement was derived from the logic of an ignorant man. I decided to venture out and headed toward the Bell and Cannon, an overpriced tourist pub on Museum Street. It retains its turn of the century charming decor, but not its turn of the century prices, menu or clientele. The bar was very crowded when I entered. However, with only a little effort, I managed to find myself a table at the far end. I had only been seated a few minutes when a young woman came over and asked if she might share my table. It was odd, because I had the distinct impression that I had seen her seated across the bar only a few minutes previously. She was very tall, and in the crowded environment of the bar, as she tried to maneuver to sit, she let her left leg rub against mine. She revealed a few inches of thigh as she crossed her legs in what I felt was rather wanton fashion. Although the bar was crowded, I couldn't help but feel there was a deliberate motive on her part to ensure that I was made aware of her presence. In contradiction to her suggested movement, I observed that she was professionally dressed, wearing a neat grey suit. She spoke with a slight London accent that seemed to conceal some other foreign tongue. Maybe I got this impression because of her olive-colored skin, leading me to think that she was not local, but originated from India or from somewhere in the Middle East. Her hair was jet black. I was sure that it was long, but she had it neatly tied back in a professional manner, making her face appear boyish and page-like. She immediately initiated some polite conversation, which I encouraged with what I considered interesting anecdotes. I noticed that she possessed a worldly quality of confidence, but in contradiction to this, there lurked a certain vulnerability. I imagined she had followed the dictates of society, only to receive nothing. Maybe it had taken a while, but judging by my increasing attraction to her, she definitely knew the male drive and how to harness it. You have to be alluring enough to attract attention, but you mustn't give too much away. There has to always be that hidden quality, the ability to draw your victim on into that forest of the mysterious. Is it greed in we men that drives us to always aspire to that which we can't possess, a quality that has the consequence of revealing the world to our species, a constant hunger to devour the unknown and make it known because of our fear of what is unknown. Being alive is a desire to experience the unknown and be challenged. How many in our society have this quality? She understood this now, I felt. Although men would never admit it and would moan about a lack of revelation, we in truth are always looking for more, and so she's decided to leave them wanting. I suddenly recall my conversation with the stranger and the mysterious, and realize now how mistaken was my argument. We continued our polite conversation for several minutes. She then abruptly rose, said goodbye, thanked me for letting her share the table, and left. I looked down to pick up my lighter and noticed there was a piece of paper at my elbow. I presumed she had pushed it across the table when I wasn't looking. I picked it up, assuming she had left me her phone number. But my indifferent gaze was startled out of inertia by a strange and garish-looking illustration. It was a depiction of a crudely drawn goat's head. I anxiously looked around to see if she was still in the bar, but she was gone. I nervously returned my attention to the coarse illustration. Although crude, it had an alluring, hypnotic, mysterious quality. Once again, I was reminded of my experience with the stranger. I turned it over and was disappointed to find that it was blank. I put it in my pocket, sensed that I had not seen the last of this woman. I came out onto the street after another point, conscious of a sense of lost opportunity. Making my way back to New Oxford Street, I took the tube and returned home. Since meeting this young woman, I have become haunted by her image, and this image is dynamically affecting my outer world. Musically, all I can now play is the same short string of notes, in the same sequence of rhythm. It is though I'm trying to perfect their chain for some move into another chain, as a gate leads to another sequence of possibility. Again and again, day after day, week after week, it's the same droning pace and the same repetition of notes. I feel I am a dispossessed man, seeking a way back to what I have lost in a pattern of keys and notes, the blacks and whites. It's the cipher that leads to the path of return. It's an overgrown, tangled path that I must follow, leading back into the past and the ocean of the subconscious from where I came, the land of the blessed, the secret domain. Today I saw the man who gave me the bracelet walking hand in hand through Lammas Park with the young woman. I don't think they saw me. Now shadows crawl along the walls, as though I begin to recall that something, half remembered, scenes as from a dream, occurred while I was within the triangle. Creeping up behind me, these shadows coat me in their umbra and steal my consciousness, holding it hostage in the dream world. When a tumbler has been used as a vessel for alcohol, a residue of the substance remains. I felt that I'd been used as a vehicle, and like the tumbler, I was contaminated by the residue of whatever has been poured into me. change. Lord of the outside, I summon thee. Hear me, for I am Anubis, opener of the way, he of the jackal head, howler in the waste. I have eaten the fruit of the sacred garden, and exiled myself from safety, partaking in the dark rite. By the action of the diagonal, I summon you, Lord Set, to open the gate of Dark, that the waters of Nu may flood this circle. Ascend, reveal yourself, intractable thrust of life, from the swelling depths of brooding possibility. Come, original future realms, and speak to me in your vibrant language of transforming principle. By the number 11, and by the inverted five-pointed star, head of the goat god, Lord Set, I summon thee. I see the circles of the two worlds, symbol of the infinite, eclipse, and from their center see that which was hidden revealed. Vesica gate, unfold and open, as did the lotus on the waters of Nu at the beginning of time. O delicate flower of transient shining glory, plunge your thirsting roots into the rich velvet pool of night. Be the vehicle of my dissident spirit, that I may peel off the past to traverse the miraculous spiral of opening, that I may live for the moment within the adventure land of boundless stars of opportunity. The celebration of you, Lord Set, is the golden section, harmonious creation that unfolds into the unknown future. By the number 11, and by the inverted five-pointed star, head of the goat god, Lord Set, I summon thee. Lord Set, I have opened the dimension gate in the desert of your realm, and the highway to the stars is before me. I take the gate and walk between worlds to partake in the dark rite, the eternal return to drink the waters of Nu. I unite with thee, sun behind the sun, in this sacred place that I have constructed in your honor, that the ghost songs of my ancestors may echo through my being in symphonies of cathedral proportion. By the code of my birthright, I mutate with cavalier abandon into the spirit with burnished wings. My number is 11, and I stand between the 4 and 9. By the number 11, and by the inverted five-pointed star, head of the goat god, Lord Set, I welcome thee. In the labyrinth, something magical occurs. While the ghost songs of our ancestors echo through our being in a symphony of cathedral proportion, we, to our credit, take that composition and fashion it with cavalier abandon. Metamorphosizing through death, we emerge to crystallize as angels with burnished wings.